This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge that tonight we're meeting on the lands of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, any other elders from other communities who might be here with us tonight or might be listening to this at a later date. It also feels appropriate to acknowledge the elders in the queer community, those who have gone before us, given their lives in some instances, and dedicated a lot of time and energy and sweat for the cause of queer rights, and allow big old poofters like myself and the other people on the stage here.
Big old or big old?
We haven't begun yet. Who have allowed their work and their sacrifices have allowed queer people today to live openly and freely as we do. My name is Tom Ballard. I'm going to be hosting tonight's proceedings. This is Bent Merriment, a discussion about queer comedy, how those two things, being queer and being funny, work together. How they relate to each other. And basically, I can't do better than the Wheeler Centre website, which described this event as a discussion about whether whom one bones influences one's funny bones.
Oh, that's very good.
Very droll. Mm. Thank you, Wheeler Centre. We're going to have a chat for about 45, 50 minutes with this wonderful panel, and then we'll throw it over to you guys. We'd love to hear your questions about anything and everything. Maybe have a quick comment to make as well. So please be thinking about that throughout the discussion. We'd love to hear from you towards the end of the chat. I'll introduce our fabulous panel, and then I'd ask them to give them a big fat round of applause. Stephen Oliver is a published playwright, poet, actor, writer, and producer. He's a descendant of the Kuku Yellinjai, Wanyi, Gangalida, Wapabara, Bunjalung, and Biripi peoples.
Yep, in other words, biggest mob.
Biggest mob. He was born in Cloncurry, northwest Queensland, and grew up in Townsville before moving to Perth to study performing arts. He's the creative director at the Brisbane Indigenous Media Association, and he's much loved for his performances on the ABC's Black Comedy.
Slack comedy.
I'm not going to ask you to do the catchphrase, but if you wanted to do it, then that would be cool.
You got to say, can't even do it.
Maybe later on. Geraldine Hickey is an award-winning stand-up comedian who tours all over the country, being very, very funny indeed. She's been shortlisted for the Peer Determined Award for Best Show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival multiple times, The Piece of Wood. And along with Jeff Sparrow and Sarah Smith, she presents The Breakfasters Show on Triple R. And Debbie Larder describes herself as a horrid little troll in a boy's skin. It's on your website, mate. She took out the Raw Comedy Competition in 2013 and tied for first place in the national final of So You Think You're Funny at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival that year. She's appeared on the ABC's Comedy Up Late, Triple J, and Foxtel's Open Slather, and has her own podcast with Bart Freeburn, We Are Not Doctors. Would you please welcome our fantastic panel? Hey, dudes.
Hey.
Hi.
Excuse my sickness, by the way, too. I think Stephen might be a little bit sniffly.
No, just that me.
Yes, very sexual. I want to start with a bit of a list. Here's a few names that came up to mind when I thought about queer comedy. Oscar Wilde, Graham Chapman, Margaret Cho, Julian Clary, Ellen DeGeneres, Simon Amstel, Hannah Gadsby, Wanda Sykes, Josh Thomas, Tig Notaro, Alan Carr, Graham Norton, Joel Creasy, Cameron Esposito, Matt Lucas, Zoe Lyons, Joe Lycett, Jane Lynch, Bob Down, Kate McKinnon, Graham Kennedy, Magda Szubanski, Lily Tomlin, Reese Nicholson, Craig Hill, Rosie O'Donnell, Mae Martin, Quentin Crisp, Sherilyn Barnes, David Sedaris, drag queens and kings, and performance artists like Simon Hunt, a.k.a. Pauline Pants Down, and of course you three. And me, oh my God. I want to run through the panel. Who are the queer comedy heroes that you might have, or role models that you might have seen as you were growing up, or as you started finding yourself being interested in comedy? Who are the role models out there that that crossed your path and inspired you? Stephen?
It's funny actually listening to that, because I was actually kind of computing all the names I actually knew. Mm-hmm. So I knew Oscar Wilde, Julian Clary, Lily Tomlin. Yeah, I didn't really know, like, when you went through the list. And it's funny, because I get asked this question a lot about who are my comedy kind of role models, and it was something I'd really had to sit down and kind of think about. And this is going to seem really weird, but when it comes to an actual comedy role model, it's Jackie Chan. When I sat and thought about it, I went, actually, yeah, Jackie Chan. And just Aboriginal people in general, black people, like, Look, I just have to see a black person on TV and they make me laugh. For example, I don't know if you remember the story from years ago, but there was a crocodile attack in the NT.
Yep.
And the croc was actually dragging the woman down to the river, and her man jumped on top of the crocodile and poked it in its eye, and it let her go. So anyway, they're interviewing her at the front of Darwin Hospital, and she's in a wheelchair with her leg all bandaged up, but she's like smoking a cigarette. And the reporter goes, so how do you look at your husband? Do you see him as a hero? And she went, Not just him, I was fighting it too.
Sorry.
Yeah,
what's Black
Wrestler
in general.
Okay, so that's interesting though, because I mean, if you might not have a comedy hero necessarily, but also as a queer Indigenous man, you wouldn't necessarily have seen yourself or seen the thing that you wanted to be necessarily. Did you any queer Indigenous performers who did comedy when you were growing up or figuring out who you were as a performer?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange. I mean, we lost a fabulous queer Indigenous performer this year, in David Page. But sorry. But yeah, there wasn't that. You don't kind of see that on TV. So yeah, Uncle Jack Charles as well. And you know, you didn't grow up kind of seeing that. I mean, you hardly see black. It's like I mentioned to you before. Like, you know, black people, although you know, will hate what they see on First Contact, will watch it because we hardly see black people on TV. You know, so there's that kind of side. So yeah, no, you know, I didn't grow up to it, but it's kind of strange because you know, when we got nominated for the Logie for Black Comedy, and you know, I just wanted to say thank you. A big thank you to go out to the black community and the gay community, because I realised how much of an influence they both are on my humour. You know, and even the Aussie community to an extent, you know, they've all informed my humour, my identity in a way. But, yeah, I didn't kind of have any role models per se, but I know very much that I'm influenced by the black and gay community.
Yeah. Jez, how about you?
Well, I guess I was doing comedy for many, many years before I worked out that I was gay, so growing up, it's not like I necessarily had any particular people that inspired me. The sad thing is that I listen to a lot of Bill Cosby, and it's really
silence.
That's bad. So, but I guess once I had started doing comedy and you know, kind of accepted that I was gay and then transitioned into that. Well, not that it was really a transition, but obviously Hannah was a big influence in the whole thing. Just as a bit of a mentor and a friend and someone that was just like, it's not a big deal. So I guess that there was that. And I guess, you know, also people like Lily Tomlin and stuff and Ellen, and these are just women in general, and Judith Lucy and Denise Scott, are women in general that I found to be funny, and it had nothing to do with being queer or anything, because at the time I wasn't looking for that or realise that I was even looking for it, I guess.
I want to come back to that because I think it's a really interesting story there about Jez and her journey. But Demi, how about you?
I remember when I was like starting and trying to get into comedy, I saw Deanne Smith a lot on like Good News Week and stuff like that. And then she came to town, and I when I lived in Adelaide, and I saw her in a park, and I was trying to take surreptitious photos. just to send to my friends to be like, check it out. And I also didn't know that I was gay or gayish, whatever, back then. And I saw her later that night at a gig, and she was like, hey, you bloody creep. And then she was like, and I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know how, I don't know how to speak. And she said, yeah, I was texting one of my friends saying, there's a tiny gay taking photos of me in a park. And I didn't know, so I was like, there's a what? Like, and then 5 years later, maybe, I was in Montreal and I saw her on the street and I was like, hey. And she was like, hey, are you gay yet? And I was like, yeah.
She made it, everyone! Yay!
So, like, she was a pretty big influence.
In more ways than one, yes. Well, then, yeah, I'd love to hear about how those two things came together then. Your interest in comedy and your queerness. And I'll come back to you, Jez, because I think that's... you do have this interesting story where you were regularly doing comedy for a long time. You'd done a few shows under your belt, and you would do material similar to, you know, Josh Thomas's story too, where he had material about how people thought he was gay and could play with that and make fun with that, you know, comedically, and it always worked really well. Then, crazy story. Turns out they were right, and then he's bloody milked that for all it's worth. Tell us about what that was like for you.
Yeah, I kind of felt like it happened. So I came out at a gig, and it was in Adelaide, where all the good gays come out. And it was kind of, it just came about from looking for material. It's just a really weird kind of, and I'd previously come out like in my early 20s and felt really intimidated by the whole scene and went, oh, that's not for me. I went, can't be gay, went back in the closet. And then I kind of, over 10 years, went, oh, come on now. You are. But then it was finding a way to accept that I was wrong for the past 10 years, and that was a really difficult thing. So I kind of had to have this big thing but be a bit blasé about it and we go, oh, yeah, guys, I was just kidding. The last 10 years, we're like, oh, whatever. So finding a way to do that was, for me, the only way to do that was through comedy. And it was Hannah and somebody else that I can't remember, Amelia. Who am I thinking of?
Amelia Jane Hunter?
Yes, Amelia Jane Hunter, would do a late-night show called Pony Club. And it was basically them, because festivals can be quite lonely, and so they would just sit on stage the whole time that, you know, and they'd have guests come up and stuff and they'd heckle you and whatnot. It was just a really fun, silly late-night show. And they would have a theme and they said, come and do Pony Club. The theme for the night is boy or girl. And I went, all right, well, I guess I'll just come out then. Because that was, and it just seemed like a really easy thing to do. And I think during the gig, I started doing this material. Tom said, I used to do material about, well, you'll think I'm gay, but I'm not. And then I kind of would do a bit of that and go, actually, yeah, I'm totally gay. So I came out in front of all these people and then kind of went, oh, anyway, thanks very much, see ya. And then walked off. And then Hannah got back on the stage. She goes, just so everyone knows, Jezza, that was like your official coming out, wasn't it? I was like, yep. And then the audience kind of went, oh my goodness, wow, that's how special.
How did that feel?
It felt really good. Yeah, it felt good. And then, but then for the next, you know, however long after that, it was this, I felt this constant, every time I got up on stage, I felt like I had to come out every time. And it was this weird thing where it's like, oh, everyone knows me as a straight person and so I'd had jokes around it and stuff. And then that eventually, thankfully, passed. And I realised that, A, nobody cares. And B, they get it. You don't need to spell it out for them every time. They've got it. So, yeah, it was this weird thing that carried on. Anyway.
Stephen, how about you? When did your sexuality and your comedy first intersect?
I'd probably say what kind of hit me how funny gay people are was when I saw my first drag show. I remember just sitting in the audience thinking, this is hilarious. And I was a 17-year-old. I was underage. I'd snuck in. And, snuck out. But, it's a bad, bad joke. But, I have no idea where I was going with that. Yeah. But, yeah, I saw the drag queens and, remember thinking it was funny and it was hilarious and it was this fabulous kind of, you know, thing because I think that I'd spent so much, because I didn't come out till I was 22 and it actually took me to be living in Perth away from family to kind of, you know, acknowledge who I was, because I was in denial for a very long time about it. And so I'd be studying in Perth and, you know, being gay over there, then I'd go back to Townsville and I'd revert back into the closet. But then my mother and sister were coming over to Perth to study. And I was like, oh, okay, I can't be walking down the street with them and some of my friends are going, oh, my God, who's that man you're with, you big slut? And, you know, I've got to tell them. And it ended up being a 4-page letter that I'd wrote to my mother. But even then, with the comedy thing, like my friends in Perth, they were some of the most hilarious people I'd ever met, especially a friend of mine named Charlie Colbung. If you ever meet this man, the stuff that just comes out, and his wit, he's just so fast. he's the way he would greet you was, hello, you big Backstreet, bend over to Bob Holly, got a slut. That was his, and he would, like, yeah. So I guess I owe my comedy to those guys as well, because they were just hilarious, some of the most hilarious people you'll ever meet.
You talked about blackfellas being funny as well. Do you think there's anything, any shared commonality there between the way Indigenous people have to be funny in many ways, or have developed this extraordinary sense of humour in the face of some very shitty history in this country, and many would say, for, you know, the same for, say, Jewish people as well, and the queer community? Do you think that we are compelled in many ways? Some people just sort of have to be funny because of all the shit we've been through?
I think so. I think you have to laugh at the, you know, the stupid side of it sometimes to kind of get you through the, you know... Because, like, it's funny, it's a friend of mine... He'd been bashed, but then he was talking to me and he goes, you know what, but then I started laughing at myself, because after it happened, I was walking down the street and I was like, he just saw the funny side in it as well. So I think, you know, when there has been...
The funny side of being gay bashed?
Yeah, well, it was the way he was kind of feeling sorry for himself and everything. And you know, but it was that way, I think, of dealing with it as well. And so I think that's what a lot of trauma has done, is that you go, God, you just feel so shit and you're so down, and you need to make yourself laugh to feel better, because if you lose yourself in that sadness, it'll just consume you. So I think that's, you know, that oppression that's happened, you know, has brought about this sense of humour as well. So, you know.
Demi, you have, I think, what is one of the finest jokes I've heard for a very long time about how you... Do you mind me doing it?
Yeah, go ahead.
About how you look like a gateway to homosexuality for both genders, yeah. Which is beautifully done. It makes me laugh every single time.
Tried and tested.
I mean, yeah, you're exploring a different world too. You're bisexual.
Yeah.
You play with a bunch of gender stereotypes, and you've talked about that journey between, you know, Deanne Smith telling you that you were gay before you figure it out for yourself.
Yep.
How have you used comedy to explore your sexuality and take ownership of that?
I tried really hard not to be, you know, queer or representing that way for ages, because my mum really wanted me to be gay, which is like the opposite of what most people get. But she was like, I just hope one of my daughters turns out gay. And I was like, well, fuck you. I'm not doing it. And
that didn't help.
I know. I still, you know, won't give her a like straight answer when she asks me about the queer stuff. But so I tried really hard not to talk about it on stage for a while. But like, how am I not gonna? Like, it's all that there is. But it's usually just like, hey, I'm kind of a little boy, right, guys? that's just how it comes out. It's not so much like, oh, I do it on both types.
Definitely don't do it that way.
I still find it really hard to say like the word bisexual. It's
why?
Because when I was, this is another thing why it was weird to be doing queer stuff when I was like coming up and coming out, was that people really liked to make fun of me or accuse me of doing it in an attention-seeking way, which was like really gross. So I tried to just cram it in and like silence it and just be like, no, I just look like a little boy. That's all it is. not gay. Okay. And it gave me some weird complexes for a while. It's the whole thing.
Have you managed? So what I found is that I was doing comedy before I came out. I then came out to figured out that I was gay, then came out, and then started doing jokes about being gay and jokes about the awkwardness of being in the closet and the coming out process. And I came out to a lot of my comedy friends through just doing gigs. Like, we had a gig and I'd get up and started doing these jokes about how I'm gay, and then would come off stage and they'd be like, okay. You know, it's much easier than sort of a mass audience rather than sitting around down individually. But the tremendous power and the ownership of that process, of owning that experience in all its awkwardness and shittiness and all those gross feelings, was very empowering to me. Mm. Did you find that too, Jez? And getting and milking the awkwardness and the reality of being queer for comedy, for material, getting laughs out of what can be often a very tricky experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I did a whole show about coming out. So, like, I came out at this gig and then went, well, there's my next show. but during the...
This is how we see the world, comedians. Yeah. Like, okay, that's 20
it's
minutes.
Like, what's happened in my life? So yeah, I did this show. Turns out I do like sun-dried tomatoes. Thank you.
I had no idea what that was. It took me ages to figure that out.
Yeah, it was... I was very happy with the title.
I just got it just then.
Yeah.
The others will get it when they go home. But it was, yeah, that whole... Writing that show and performing that show was really, like what you said, just really empowering and stuff. It was one of the hardest shows I've ever had to do because the whole process of it was, you know, during the writing of the show was when I was coming out to my parents, and like it was like 2 weeks before I first did the show at the Feast Festival in Adelaide, and it was only 2 weeks before that I'd come out to my parents, and then I was talking about that in the show, and it was the real kind of like I'd do that show and like on multiple nights I would be crying when I'd talk about that experience, because it didn't go, like, I've got really conservative Catholic parents that were a bit upset when they when I came out to them. But during that whole process, I found out later, like, I had written a letter to my parents as well, because at first I'd spoken to Mum on the phone, because I said, oh, I'm writing this new show, it's all about me coming out because I'm gay. And she was like, so is it true or is it just for the material? I was like, oh no, it's true. And she went, all right, well, I'll tell your father. And then I got an email off her the next day saying, oh, I think it's, I'm not going to tell your father. It doesn't feel quite right. And so and she goes, I can't say that I'm that happy about it. And then she said something else that I've obviously blocked from my memory because it was hard. But then so I wrote this letter to my parents explaining everything, and then I found out later, like, Mum didn't speak to me for 2 weeks, which in the whole story, like, I probably haven't spoken to Mum in 2 weeks now, but it was 2 weeks where I knew that, you know, there was issues there. And then it all kind of worked out. My dad called me and he was like, I got your letter. And I just want to say I love you no matter what. Everything's going to be fine and you're my daughter. And it was beautiful. And then I found out later that my mum had this letter that she would carry in her handbag all the time. And so when people were like, oh, how are the kids going? She's like, well, Geraldine's come out. And she'd pull out this letter and show everyone. So, you know. So
she's got lovely handwriting too, doesn't she?
It was printed. Anyway.
Did they see the show?
Dad didn't. No, I don't think they did. I don't think I was ready to let them see it. Because my parents don't often come and see me do comedy in general. Like, you know, they just... Dad kind of doesn't get it. He just goes, who writes it? it's all me. And I think... But it's only, you know, recently that Dad... I did a gig back at home in Albury and because I was headlining the gig, Dad was like, oh, this is actually proper. you know what you're doing now. And so he's a bit more open to the whole thing. So he's very, like, it's the first time I'd done comedy in front of my dad for like 10 years, and he was openly proud of what I was doing, because I think he just got it. Like, he understood me and what I do. And because before it was all this, whatever. I don't get it. So he's quite distant, but now he kind of, you know, he's much more engaged and proud, I guess. So things are good now.
There's a big difference between maybe coming out to your parents and then you know, dealing with that, processing that, or your family and friends, and they go, okay, they go, I can deal with that. There's a difference between that and then them coming to your stand-up show and you talking at length about how you had gonorrhea once or how a man vomited on your genitals. Yeah. These are just ideas I'm plucking out of nowhere. Stephen, how about you? How have people in your life reacted to you, not just being queer necessarily, but, you know, that being a fundamental part or an obvious part of you as a performer in your work?
I had actually had a kind of big moment, like when we were filming Black Comedy, the first season, and I went, I'm literally going to be coming out to hundreds of thousands of people. And I kind of thought, okay, what? Does that mean I'm going to be open to homophobia more? And then, you know, I thought of my nieces and nephews, are they going to be ridiculed at school? You know, like, oh, you got that gay uncle, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, these are the kind of thoughts I have. And I went, well, that's all the more reason why I need to be out, because it needs to be normalised. People need to see this. You know, it needs to be talked about, not this kind of other, we're the other thing all the time. We're just a part of society. And it was quite... I'm going to be known as the sook after this panel. But my old high school contacted me, where most of my nieces and nephews go to, and they asked me to be the guest speaker at the graduation ceremony. And then I got messages from people where a woman was telling me, I acted out one of your sketches last night with my nephew to let him know it was okay that he was gay, and he came out to us. Mm. And then I get a message from another guy going, man, you've changed my thoughts about gay people. And, you know, when you kind of get that feedback,
yeah,
because you kind of think you're going to be hated or you're going to be judged, you're going to be ridiculed, and, you know, and for anyone, that's why we need to keep 18C, if anyone's, you know, make sure we keep that, because that's what you think you're opening yourself up to. So when people react in that way, you go, wow, humanity is good. You know, we're not that shit.
Sometimes.
Oh, oh my gosh.
I brought that up here for snot, not tears.
That's a tissue for people listening to this on the podcast. I know what that sounds like if you don't know what we're talking about there.
I cry a lot.
Oh, yeah. We're getting this film too, damn it.
I mean, that's lovely. That's beautiful feedback. That's a wonderful thing. What about the not-so-nice stuff? Demi and Jen, and we'll go around the panel too. Do you ever feel like being queer or being open about your sexuality or gender identity has put you at a disadvantage or got in the way of your career or the kind of work you want to do?
Or shall I?
There you go.
Demi, okay. Please.
Yeah. I feel like... all right, so I recorded a... the way that I... sorry, bring it back to this, but the way that I came out to my dad was by accident on a podcast. Because I thought he already knew. Because I was like, mate, look at my haircut. Like, it was just, I was talking to him, and the idea of the podcast was like, I'm going to talk to my dad about a bunch of stuff that's going to make us both really uncomfortable. And one of them was sex. And, he's pretty, like, gruff and, like, an old dude. And we're talking about, like all the different sexual experiences that he'd had and stuff. And it's real weird. And then he asked me a couple questions right near the end. And I was like, oh, I was dating this girl that said this to me. And Dad was like, hey, what was it? Just go back for 1 second. So I think you'd be dating a girl? And I was like, yeah, because I do that. And he went, oh, yuck! And... and I said, yuck. Oh, we better wrap this up. And it killed the podcast a little bit. And then for a cut... So it wasn't... It's usually not like... With me, people from the outside doing it, it's more that stuff that I didn't expect because I felt like it was really obvious and it's not, and it messed me up for a couple of weeks. And then my dad visited Melbourne and he was like, oh, hey, just hypothetically, if you, like, had a girl crush, like, who would that be? And I was like, cool olive branch, man. So, like, it's just, it's, I think, it's more that kind of stuff that sets me back internally, then right. I think.
Yeah, it's
I think
unexpected.
It's, yeah. And I think it's easier for me because I'll have boyfriends or whatever and I can just, like, pretend. Like, if I'm not feeling it, if I'm anxious about it, I can just pass. As I'll be like, oh, I'm
we know, my mate. We know. But, yeah. I guess that's it's always the when you don't expect it. I haven't had it a lot that I know of. Do you know what I mean? But I remember one when I was doing the show at festival and I was out the front of the town hall every night handing out flyers, going, please come see my show, and talking to people. And I spoke to this really lovely older couple that seemed really interested and they were like, great, and they're like, what's the show about? And I said, oh, it's a bit, I've recently come out, it's just about that. It's a bit of a journey. I'm still going on it. But, yeah, it's funny. Don't worry, it's funny. Like, even the title's funny. And and they were really engaged and interested. And go, oh, thanks very much. And then I said, you can go get tickets over there. And they went, cool, we'll see you there. And then they walked off. And then they didn't come to the show. And I didn't think anything of it because people do that all the time. Don't do that, people. Please don't do that. Just come or say, oh, I'll give it a miss. Anyway, they didn't come to Australia, which is fine. But then there was someone in the information, working in the information booth, and for some reason she decided to tell me that they, after speaking to me, they came up to the booth and said, oh, do you have any recommendations of shows? And they said, oh, yeah, she's really good, because they were still holding my flyer, and they went, oh, yeah, we don't want to see anything gay. And it was like, oh, what? Why did you have that whole conversation with me? Why not just, and A, what is your problem? And B, why engage with me? Like, just, if you're not into it, just please just walk away, you know? It was really, and that's the only, I'm trying to, like, I can't think of any other kind of, you know, obvious ones, but that was one, because it was so early on as well, that was one that really affected me.
Stuck with you. Stephen?
Yeah, I've had some things, but it's weird. I try to work out whether it's because I'm gay or because I'm black. So they never actually said what it was, but I've had. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
Choose one bigot, please.
I don't know.
Please settle on one minority and
exactly,
focus on
like
that.
Just what is it? Yeah, maybe it's both. I don't know. So. But yeah, like, you know, sometimes people will put things on my Facebook page, like one was about I need to be glassed or I need to be gutter stomped. But you know, when I see that kind of stuff, it's kind of like, yeah, well, the more you tell me to shut up, the letter I'm gonna get. So you know, like, I remember actually, no, I did see this one thing where a guy commented, he said, oh, they're pushing the gay agenda on black comedy, and I said, well, stop putting up walls. I won't have to push it down if you don't put shit up. Simple as that. So you know,
good attitude.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just think, fuck you to people, you know, and it's, you know, because you try to be nice, you know, and like, as performers, we're trying to make the world a happier place. We want to bring laughter, and for people to hate on us for doing that, because that's the one thing this world needs, you know. So, you know, it just pisses me off even more that you got people like that.
When you talk about being louder, I think that's interesting, because there is sometimes a tricky balance, and it sort of reflects back on your story there, Jez, too, about, you know, oh, we want to see something gay, as if every coming out show is the same, as if anyone talking about being gay on stage is the same, as if there isn't diversity within the queer experience. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, my first show was about coming out too, and the ownership of that experience was really important to me. And then I wanted to back away completely because I didn't want to be pigeonholed. I didn't want to be a gay comic. I wanted to be a comic who happened to be gay. And then my show 2 years ago, I wanted to throw myself right back into it. I had sort of all these stories built up about homophobia and I really wanted to embrace that fully and talk about it. I had a bit more of a fuck you moment there, Stephen, where I was like, no, I have every right to talk about this. It's not like homophobia isn't a problem for me personally and people in the world. So if I can explore that and make that funny in my comedy, then I want to do that. So how do you balance that? How do you balance that between not being pigeonholed as just a queer artist, or maybe that's something that you do want to identify as and deal with all the time, but also be true to yourself and do the kind of work you want to do?
I think it'd just be you. Like, well, I mean, that's what I do. I just, you know, I'm me on stage, but, you know, being gay is only one part of me. So obviously that's going to come up, but so is other things, like the fact that I really love Lego. So
is that a lesbian thing, Lego?
Nah, it's a mental health thing. It's really good. It's like, you know, mindfulness colouring in. It's very good for your mental health.
Do you ever feel responsibility, Demi, for representing queer people or the way you talk about being queer on stage, whether what people are going to take away from that as an audience necessarily?
I find it really hard to bring up on stage. I like talking about it a lot on my podcast because we get a lot of, like, queer kids following that and sending us in voicemails, and it's really easy for them to do. Like, I get a lot of messages about it, and it's kind of like the biggest gig that I do every week because there's a lot more people listening, and I feel like it's an easier way because I'm not met with any reaction at the time. So I think that is more the way that I want to reach out about it because I can't really deal with the immediate, like, we hate this or hey, we love this, you know. I think it's...
But also you don't have to write jokes about it if you're just talking about it on a podcast.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So there's that freedom as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's... Yeah. I don't know. What am I trying to say? Help.
That's all right. No worries. What about you, Stephen?
And it wasn't until I actually put it down in writing, but I was kind of answering someone with something they said. And, yeah, I feel I have a responsibility to the Aboriginal community. I have a responsibility to the gay community. But then I have a responsibility to the gay Aboriginal community. You know, so it's all these things, but it's, you know, it's exactly about being you, who you are as well. Because I remember seeing once, because like with my poetry and stuff like that, and someone commented, this is what we need more of. Oh, you know, I didn't like the what's this then slut kind of stuff, but this is what you should be doing more of. And it's like, well, no, that slut stuff and that poem, that goes hand in hand. That's me, that's who I am. And I'm not going to just, you know, kind of cater to one. You know, there's a thing about watering your garden, your spirituality, of whatever you focus on more, that's, you know, what you nurture, that's what grows. And it's like, well, I've got all these things about me. So I focus on all of them. And, you know, it might seem a bit hard for people to go, oh, but he's so stupid, how could he be so serious? Like, that's their issue, not mine. Mm. So the only way people will get to understand it is that, by me kind of just doing that. Mm. So, yeah. Did that answer it?
No, absolutely. No, I think that's really interesting. Is there, and please pull me off if I word this clumsily, but it's something I actually had questions going into First Contact about, we never really got onto, but about the way, is there any kind of specific challenges for queer people within Aboriginal Australia and Indigenous people facing a certain kind of discrimination or awkwardness around queer people? I know with, like, sister girls and brother boys, there's this a beautiful sort of tradition and a recognition of gender diversity there, but have you found, as an Aboriginal man, within your own community, you're facing a different kind of homophobia that some others, you know, the rest of us might not be too familiar with?
Not really. The one thing I kind of did notice was a bit weird was sometimes people would ask me for photos, and then after they get a photo, make a joke, oh, you want him, eh? Like that kind of not realizing of what they're actually doing.
What,
like, so they'd make a joke about, I don't know, there's a thing where black people, like, we go, oh, that's your man, eh? Or you want him, eh? Right. Like, kind of tease. But then, so they would make a joke out of the whole gay thing of, like, right. Oh, so it's like, well, why are you asking me for a photo? You want to stand up and smile with me? And then you're going to kind of straight away. But in terms of it, no, I think I've been a bit of a shock for some of the black fellas in the community too. Because it was interesting when I did NAIDOC last year and I did my set. And when I looked back at it, I actually realised what I did. I started off with a poem that reaffirmed my Aboriginality. Then with my second poem, I did a line about being gay in it. And then for my third thing, I did a music theatre song about being a minority within a minority. To then I just did a song that was all about just being gay and wanting men. So I kind of did this progression. And it was even, you know, I made a joke.
You lubed them up.
I said, you know, I'd like to do a traditional song for my people. Not Aboriginal people, gay people. It's music theatre. So... You know, but yeah, no, and I think it's kind of like, you know, it's. I think a lot of people have been shocked in a way to go, oh wow, he's this gay fellow, but he's really deadly. Kind of like, whoa, what's happened?
That's great. That's fucking awesome. Let's talk about, we're coming to audience questions in a bit, so please get your thinking caps on. We'd love to hear from you in a tick. When does comedy not do so well by queer people? And when does it go wrong, is what I'm interested in hearing from you. And that could be material that you yourself have written and performed that on reflection you're thinking, oh, actually, maybe that didn't quite service me as a queer person or queer people generally as much as I would have liked to have done. Have you seen other comics perform material that gets you goat up and makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable? I have this tricky thing where I've seen some straight comedians do pro-gay marriage material, and I appreciate that. I see where they're coming from, but they do it in a way that still relies on some pretty clumsy stereotypes and in some way still, in my view anyway, sells queer people down the river a little bit, as in making some innuendo, ooh, what am I like, jokes, which we could all enjoy in our own way, but there's just something extra problematic about it when it comes out of the mouth of a straight person in the cause of queer rights. Jess?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's that, why can't you listen to us? Why do you need to preach about it? Like, we're already telling you, I get the same feelings when men talk about feminism. Like, when guys do... sorry, Tom, I know you are... The exception, but also...
The exception. Do you hear that, everyone? It's fine. I'm the best.
But you do... But I think that's one of the issues that I have with... Like, I feel that guys are going, oh, hey, I'm a feminist, because, and I can see underneath, like, you're just saying this so you can get women, whereas you are clearly not doing that. So, and I feel the... And it's kind of the same thing with, you know, yeah, straight people talking about, yeah, I'm all for marriage equality, and you're just doing it so people will like you. Please just, you know, please listen to my voice when I talk about it. And it's more frustrating when you see, like, when I will do a joke about a certain topic and then some straight, more popular white male will get up and do the same topic and they'll go, "Boy, he's fucking breaking ground." And it's like, no, I just did it.
Can't believe he's standing up for people who can stand up for themselves.
Yeah.
What a great
guy.
So
brave. Demi, how about you?
It just makes me upset. I'm not a fan.
Demi?
Yeah, that's... it's really annoying because often it does come from what they think is a really good place, and it's upsetting when it's your very left friends that say something a bit fucked and you have to be like, hey, that was a bit fucked. And they're like, no, it's not. I can be way more fucked than that.
Freedom of speech.
Yeah, like I'm fucking helping you. You don't want me to. I'll go the other direction. So fucking watch out. Like, oh, scary. No good. It's also just, it's really frustrating to... be making valid points and just not be listened to, like, in the simplest way. And just like the whole, oh, fucking, I love to go to a gay wedding because, like, oh my god, their design is so good. Yeah, that's one dimension.
It's the other. It's that weird thing where it's like, no, gay people are actually great. Because well, now you're homogenizing gay people the other way. You're not just dismissing them as negative people. You're actually saying, you know how queer people are and how they're all the same, and they, live up to these certain stereotypes.
It's kind of like, because it feels like they're saying, like, contrary to popular belief, I actually think gay people are good.
I'd go so far as to say they're human beings. David?
It's kind of interesting in the sense of, like, because with me and Aaron, like, Aaron, you know, playing the other titter, and, you know, he's straight. And I think some of the times, like, he would make things really sexual. Mm. Or, like, everything's like, ooh, like, oh, wow. I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, stop it. Just act what I've written. But, because I found it funny even when I went to the Mardi Gras this year, and he kind of went, ABC asked me to do this thing, and he went, oh, where was my invitation? I went, you're not gay, slut. And like, and I don't see any of your posts about happy Mardi Gras, like, you know, married rights, like, come on, slut. So, you know, but you had, I remember a guy commenting some Facebook page had taken the wedding march I did and they'd put it up on this thing, and there was, I obviously read Facebook comments, but he said, oh, yeah, I don't think the gay community are going to appreciate this. And what do you say? I said about almost the gay guys I know don't act like this or da-da-da-da-da. And so I said to him, like, and, you know, this, and I very rarely reply, but I felt the need to reply to this because I went to him, well, you don't see the problem with you being a straight person commenting about what is best for gays. And also with the... I wish I remember what I wrote because it was really good. But anyhow, he went on where he went about... He goes, oh, let's get back to the point. You decided to generalise gays like this. And I said, no, I decided to portray myself as this or as a character, not gay people, because you can't tell the difference. That's with you, not me.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the gay community.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm gay. Yeah, exactly, you know. And he's there just telling me, and I'm like, and you're speaking on behalf of, say, and the gay guys, you know, but you haven't even spoke to them about your reply to me. So, you know, and I think that's... Because I got asked to question the same thing with DNA, is that, you know, us gays are kind of laughing more at ourselves, where, you know, they said, you know, you think back in the past, a lot of people would know, oh, we don't act like that or da-da-da. But I think it is that thing of that, you know... Because my answer was like, but that's something to me of that side of things where I laugh and I think we need to celebrate that kind of stuff. And why shouldn't I be able to do that side of me or, you know, play it in that way? Why do I have to be a certain way as a gay person just to, what's the word I'm looking for? Just to please, you know, the mentality of someone else. Mm. So, you know, that's the only way I can think of sometimes if there was a problem with acting camp and doing that kind of stuff, it's that people would take it in a certain way as that's what gay is. Mm. Because that's their thought process rather than us.
There's also just the fundamental nature of being openly queer sometimes is constantly being read as being political or trying to make a statement, you know, because our identities are politicised in lots of different ways. Mm. So on Triple J, you know, I'm not a particularly camp gay dude, and many people would tell me they were quite surprised when they found out that I was gay. And on the radio, I would just be telling a story about my boyfriend in passing, and I would get texts like, oh, Tom, we get it. No one cares. God. I'm like, well, no. If I was talking about my girlfriend, you wouldn't read it as some kind of, you know, declarative statement about my sexuality. But just because they're hearing a guy talking about his boyfriend, this was automatically some kind of, you know, Stonewall March. Anyway, we're getting a couple of questions real soon. So if you have a question, please pop your hand up and our lovely Willis Centre staff will notice you and will come to you with a microphone. While that's happening, one last question for the panel from me. Advocacy, and you sort of touched on this, you know, very powerfully before, Stephen, about what queer comedy can do as a change or how it can personally affect certain people. But how do you see the work that you do potentially being a vehicle for change or for advocacy, or... Is that something that you've let influence your work as you're writing your work and thinking about it, as Jess helped you?
I guess it's similar to Stephen in that I just want to be an example of just being able to be myself and whatever that is, and that's okay. Just that.
Debbie?
I kind of feel the same. I think sometimes it feels like there's no pressure, but I think sometimes there's a little bit of like, oh, I have a responsibility. Clearly I don't. Nobody cares, but it's kind of more just like, hey, you can just be comfortable. I'm really like comfortable now, and I think it's more about that, like queer kids who are younger than me being like, yeah, I kind of feel more normal seeing you talk about shit. It's like, yeah, man, sick. That's what I'm aiming for. Just like, yeah.
Stephen?
Basically, it's that thing of normalising, of us not being the other, that if we mention our boyfriend, it's not an issue, you know what I mean? So I guess the people just, the more they see of it, the more they get used to it, the more they, you know, and it's happening, so... Mm.
It's good. Thumbs up. Cool. Questions? Cool. Someone at the back there.
Hi. Hello. Mr. Humphreys from Are You Being Served? Apropos of the list, do we own him or not?
I can hardly remember. I can't remember. All I remember is, ooh.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, as far as I can tell.
So I guess that answers it.
They're bringing it back. They've in the UK, they're relaunching Are You Being Served, which to me indicates a dearth of new ideas kicking around the British comedy scene. It seems bizarre to me. Okay, yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting. You touched on campness there, Stephen. There are obviously extremely camp queer comedians who are in many ways, you know, role models who are absolutely themselves. Someone like Joel Creasy is extremely camp in real life on and off stage. But there are characters that, yeah, in the canon that might serve the gay stereotypes. Graham Norton, Mr. Humphreys, what do you reckon? Could those things stand or are they very much of their time?
The thing I actually find interesting about that was, do we own him or not? I don't know, this thing about ownership or taking ownership of someone I find interesting. But, yeah, no, well, I guess, like I said, because I grew up in Cloncurry, well, till I was 8 years old, where all we had was the ABC. So that's what I remember, You Being Served. But in terms of Mr. Humphreys, yeah, that's all I really remember about him, is that kind of, ooh. So I guess that kind of answers...
And do you see that as a homophobic character?
Well, I'd have to watch him again to actually kind of make an informed decision about that. But I guess if all I'm remembering is the ooh, then his character mustn't have really done much for me to remember him by.
Yeah. Mm. Jez or Demi, any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got no comment about that.
are there other stereotypical depictions of queer people in comedy that you see? I think I've even seen stuff on Family Guy where, you know, the lesbian character is a big, butch, grumpy, unemotional woman. You know, it's a constant battle because in comedy you do often deal in generalizations and you do need to hit on these kind of broad truths to get a laugh that lots of people can relate to. So there are some representations of queer people and queer characters that, you know, are potentially so broad that's kind of half the joke.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a joke of like, I do this because of course I'm a lesbian?
All the time.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah. I generalise my people a lot. But
And surely that's okay, right? Don't we get
licensed
to do
that? We're allowed to. You know, it's us. It's our people.
Yeah.
We own them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, please. That's all right.
Sorry for interrupting. Another question?
I was wondering how you feel about when straight male comedy duos play up the homoeroticism.
Demi, I feel like you might have some thoughts.
I just, when the joke is just, hey, we're acting a bit gay, it's just so boring. Like, I get it. I just...
Imagine being gay.
Imagine how awful that would be. I've just had enough of it. And, like, that's the only response I have to it is just like, oh, shut up. I can't think of any eloquent response to it. Just, oh, stop forever doing anything.
Yeah. But even, like, the ones that aren't over the top, like, even just the really... like subtle ones that they shit me as well. Like there's that Malteser ad where the two guys have fallen asleep and the girlfriends drape them out. I'm like, oh, isn't that funny? Like, no. Who cares if you have a bit of a cuddle with your boyfriend?
Yeah.
You know, like it's the subtle ones that get me as well.
Steve.
Yeah, and that Malteser ad I found really annoying. Hey, look, I'm acting gay. You know, it's that, yeah. It's kind of stupid. But I feel like I'm missing out on something. Who's the gay straight comedy duo? Is there something I'm missing?
I reckon, lots of acts would get a huge laugh if, you know, they found themselves in some kind of physical position that, could look sexual. They might get a huge laugh out of kissing, you know, because imagine two men kissing, that's so weird. Yeah. Imagine a man coming out in a dress.
You know what I keep wanting to do? I keep wanting to, like, do a thing of, like, two gay guys sitting around and they're teasing each other about, oh, he kissed a girl. You know what I mean? Like, just to show how stupid it is when they do that kind of stuff. Mm. Like, if we reversed it, it would just look really stupid. And that's, yeah, you know, that's the kind of point. Like, that's how stupid you sound every time you do that stupid stuff. You stupid idiots. Yes, it's stupid.
All right, Oscar Wilde. What about this prickly question? Is Edna Everage or drag transphobic?
Ooh. I don't know.
Nor do I.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it would be for a trans person to answer that
to
question.
To discuss that, yeah, right. That's a good point. I've seen male stand-ups, my straight male stand-ups, talk about how disgusting they find the idea of gay sex between men. Now, and they premise those routines with a lot of, you know, good luck to you. It's none of my business. But they are trying to explore dark, shitty thoughts in their own heads when they have thought about two men having sex, and it has given them a visceral reaction of disgust. And they're trying to pick that apart on stage. And this is where sometimes I'm certainly not on board the PC's ruining comedy idea. But I feel like sometimes an exploration of the dark, awful stuff inside our heads, I think comedy does really well. And sometimes perhaps we are a bit too quick to call out those comedies and those routines and that exploration of the darker side of human nature as homophobic or transphobic. What do people make of that?
I think it really depends on how much the person's actually thought about the thoughts that they're having, because I mean, sometimes it's just like this is the example that comes to mind. It's not specifically about a gay thing, but it was a comedian that I saw once say, like, hey, ladies, we're equal now. Can you just leave me Ghostbusters?
Ooh.
Which is such a basic bitch thought. Like, just, it's never, like, I very carefully considered this and this is my opinion. Sometimes it is that, which is, like, I think is a great thing to be talking to and maybe have people, like, give you feedback on, like, this is what I think about gay sex, blah, here are my emotions. But usually it's just, like, I think it's gross. Here's why, very viscerally. Like, I don't know. I think
I think it's the end game on it. And if it's, and if you are having, you know, these talks and you want to unpack it and see where that goes, and then you find material along the way, then okay. But if you're doing that and your end result is just to have a shitty hack joke, then no.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's to the thing of some people don't even realise how ingrained homophobia or even like racism and that is. So where they're actually coming from, because they don't even understand homophobia or racism. Mm. They don't understand what it is they're actually doing. Mm. You know, it's like I put a post up today, like, I'm so tired of microaggressions. And that came about because, like, yesterday when I was waiting for the bus and I had a white gentleman here and a white lady there, and the guy turned, asked if the 379 had turned up, but he just ignored straight past me and just went to the lady there. You know, so without even realising, he just, automatically went for the white person. But then, like, today at the airport, when I went through the security thing and two other guys had walked, like, it was three in a row, so two white guys and then me, and one of the young white boys had a gun keyring in his bag. So the lady at security automatically looked at me and she said, is the gun yours? And so, yeah. And so people don't even understand how ingrained the thought process and stuff is, that are. So if they're going to be touching on that kind of content that relates to either homophobia, racism, whatever, then they have a responsibility to do it in a way that is understanding, rather than just doing it just to get a shit joke laugh kind of thing.
And it's inclusive, right? You'll see it a lot with stand-ups when the guy on stage normally would say something like, you know, guys, when you're hanging out with your girlfriend, and it's like, okay, so I'm immediately out. Mm. As an audience member, you've just assumed every dude in this room is straight, and it's fundamentally exclusive. So not everyone in that room is going to get on board. Yeah. I'm going to squeeze in one last question really quickly. Please. Thank you very much.
Hi. This is a pretty heavy question to end on, but I'm really glad Tom was bringing up transphobia and the question about drag, because I am wondering where trans and intersex people fit under your definitions of queer. I feel like we've heard a lot about lesbian, bi and gay, and that's great, but the reason I don't go to comedy is because there's so much lateral violence. I feel like you can't go without it being really binary, which has happened a lot tonight, or, you know, it punching sideways at the disabled community. So do you consider that in your work? Do you take responsibility for it? I know not all comedians are going to get everything right.
That's a really interesting question. I mean, first of all, obviously, everyone on the panel is either gay, lesbian or bi. And I think, you know, Steve made a good point before about questions around gender diversity is potentially not necessarily our place to talk about there or have firm opinions on those ideas. But thank you so much for raising that.
To be honest, it is something that I do think about in my material, and just in little things that come up. Like even at the start of my show, I'd always introduce myself. Like I'd be backstage with a mic and I'd go, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Jordan Hickey." And now I'm like, well, that might not include everyone in the room. So just little things like that. And I do material about people mistaking me for being a man. And so I have this conflict where I say this bit, I'm trying to think how it goes, but I say, anyway, I can't remember how it goes, but it's just basically about me talking about how people mistake me for being a man and me being okay with that and being, it's like, and I'd say it's not like I'm transitioning, and it's me just me stating a fact, but it'd always get a laugh, and it'd always make me feel really uncomfortable because it felt like I was making a joke on it at the expense of trans people, and that was never my intention. It was just me and my personal experience. So it was, and it's this difficult thing of whether do I. So I ended up just cutting. I would cut that bit out just because I would be aware of trans people in the room. But it's something that I'm still learning, and I feel like a lot of mistakes I will probably make, and I have made. And there's that fear there, but I'm starting to embrace that and know that, okay, if I make a mistake, I'm going to find out pretty quickly that I've made it, and then I can move on from that. So it's about, yeah, passing that fear, I guess.
Yeah.
Demi?
yeah, I think that it's something that I used to have a couple of jokes where part of the punchline would be me telling an imaginary person I'm having a conversation with to suck my dick, which I, in the universe that we live in, I don't have. But I was pulled up by people after the show to tell me that that was really transphobic, and I just felt awful and also didn't want to make a big deal about feeling awful because it's not my place. I just cut it out, and I think that's the responsible thing to do, as long as there are people that'll take the time to tell you that you fucked up, which I personally really appreciate, because I don't ever want to make anybody feel like that. Unfortunately, I know there's a lot of people that if they were told, even in a very polite way after a joke, they'd be like, well, that's comedy, so fucking suck it up. I'm not here to protect you, which, you know, is their prerogative, but it's, in my opinion, a shitty attitude, you know.
Yeah, I'm always conscious of it, and I think you kind of learnt to think in a certain way, you know, when you grow up, not just gay, but black in this society, because you know about how your words can affect something or whether someone's going to listen to you because of the words you say. So, you know, and I'm kind of the person who doesn't like offending people. Like, I learned what irreverent meant because of black comedy. And I never knew that word before. And then when I found out, you know, it was to offend people, I was like, oh, God, no, that's not... I just want to make people laugh. I don't want to offend people. That's not what I'm about. And, you know, I always take that on board because when you, like, say blackface, for example, when people do blackface, and this is what I found it kind of interesting in regards to the plebiscite that people get, what it called, you know, the LGBTIQ community anguish, but how they don't get that every time we have an Adam's Goods or every time our young boys are tortured, every time there's a death in custody, every time a mother is told they're glad their son was murdered, every time five men who bashed an Aboriginal man get a year's sentence, we go through anguish all the time. So that kind of stuff makes me very aware of what I write, because when you go through that much kind of suffering, you don't want other people to feel that kind of stuff or that way. So, yeah, I like to think I'm very aware of it.
Just rounding out that discussion, you know, I think things are changing and people pulling comedians up, as Demi mentioned, and comedians listen to that and factoring that into their work can be a really important and positive thing. Harry Condabolu was a fantastic American comedian who had a routine entitled A Feminist Dick Joke. I recommend you go check it out. But he had an audience member come up and sort of talk about the fact that, you know, the implicit in that joke is that all men have penises, or all women don't have penises. And he made an addendum to that joke, which can be found on his record, Waiting for 2042. And it's a beautiful moment. Hearing him talk about the story of that joke and how he wanted to make that effort to make his work more inclusive as a straight cisgender dude was really interesting. We're out of time. Would you please give a huge round of applause to our wonderful panel, Demi, Geraldine and Stephen. Have a lovely week. We'll see you again. Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Centre podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercentre.com for the best in books, writing and ideas from Melbourne, Australia and the world.